My guest is Ronnie Spector. In the early 60s, she was the lead singer of the Ronettes. The pinnacle of the girl group era is how Alan Bettrock, author of The Girl Groups, described the Ronettes, and he called their first big hit, Be My Baby, the perfect pop record. Many records, movies, and TV shows have paid homage to that great record. The latest is the film Dirty Dancing, which opens with it. A few years after Be My Baby rose to the top of the charts, Ronnie married her record producer, Phil Spector. At his insistence, she retired from the music business. After they divorced in the early 70s, Ronnie Spector started to record and perform again. She was back in the spotlight last year when she was featured on Eddie Money's hit record and video, Take Me Home Tonight, which was yet another tribute to her record, Be My Baby. Now she has her own new record called Unfinished Business, and we'll hear some music from it in a couple of minutes. Ronnie Spector is joining us from the NPR studios in New York. Ronnie Spector, welcome to Fresh Air.
I'm glad to be here, Terry.
So we're having yet another revival of Be My Baby. Were you surprised when you started to hear commercials with your record on it advertising the film?
I'm surprised about everything, especially about in 20-some-odd years. I never would have thought this would have ever happened. It's just like, I can't believe it. It's just like, I can't believe it. It's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful feeling.
This new revival of your record is coinciding with the release of your own new record. Is the revival of Be My Baby helping you?
Yes. I think anything that's people call a classic or that can last 20-some-odd years, you're so happy that it lasted like I am. I mean, I just think Be My Baby is one of, and not because it's my record. I just think it's a great, great pop record. And I'm just glad it's me.
How did you first hear this song? Did the songwriter sing it for you before you performed it the first time?
Well, the first time I heard it, you know, Phil and those were, and Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry. We met in a little studio, and they started writing around me. And I guess I was 16 years old. And very shy, and I liked Phil at the time, and he liked me. I think they wrote it all around that. You know, our little love affair at the beginning. I think it was all a part of that, the lyrics and stuff.
Do you remember the recording session?
Like it was yesterday.
What was it like?
It was incredible, because there I was in California recording, and I'd never left New York. I'd never been out of New York in my whole life. And there I am on a plane going to California by myself, without the other two Ronettes, just to do the lead part. And I remember being in the ladies' room at the New York airport, just singing in the bathroom, Be My, because I don't read music or anything, and I don't play any instruments. So it was like you had to just learn it over and over. And that's how, and then Phil asked me to come to California and do it at Gold Star Studios. And that's where we recorded it, and I loved it. I love it till today. I still love it. I mean, it's just a record that I remember that day being in the studio. I remember what color dress I was wearing. I remember everything.
Are there any difficulties in trying to get a new record heard when your fans are so obsessed with the things you recorded in the 1960s?
Yes, it is. It's something that I've learned to live with throughout the last, let's say, 10, 12 years. And I've accepted it because I love performing my records, my old hits, on stage. If I didn't like my songs, it would bother me probably a little bit. But as long as they're great records and the public likes them, I love singing them to the public. You know, it's still great. I mean, I'd love to have new records out in the 80s and hit records and all that. But it doesn't bother me. I love my old records, and I will never stop singing them on my shows.
In a way, I think part of your new album is an homage to your own records of the past, especially the one we're going to hear, which is called Love on a Rooftop, which has the same kind of beat to it that Be My Baby has.
Well, as a matter of fact, when his name was Desmond Child, who's a producer and writer for Bon Jovi, he said, "Ronnie, I'm going to make this a 60-80 record." I said, "Oh, please, sure you can. And when he finished, it was really a 60-80 record, and I fell in love with it when I heard the master of it. And I went in the studio and just sang my heart out because it was something, it's like I grew up on. I lived on, like my grandmother lived on the top floor, and it was a rooftop, and I met my first boyfriend, and my first kiss was on a rooftop. So it brought back so many memories. And that's why I love it so much.
Now, as we'll hear, one of the things you do on this record is your famous, I can't even imitate this,
but
your famous what-uh-oh.
Yes.
Which you do a lot in Be My Baby and in a lot of your early records. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with that? Was that something you just started singing?
No, it was like Frankie Lyman used to sing, "Why do birds sing so gay? And love is a way with break of day. Why do they fall in love?" And so I sort of got it from him, and it was like my own little ho-ho's came out, you know. I think it was like I was 3 years old. I was singing this song. What was it called? I can't even remember. But it was like a one of those yodeling songs for my family. And I think it's just something that I started, and it stuck. The ho-ho, ho-ho. As a matter of fact, when I did the Eddie Money song, "Take Me Home Tonight," I did the uh-ohs without any music or anything. And then they added that to the track. uh-ohs.
That's great. Let's hear your latest version with that. This is from your new album.
Yes.
And the album...
I'm sorry, Terry.
The album's called Unfinished Business. And the song we're going to hear is called Love on a Rooftop. And this is Ronnie Spector.
Forever on a dime. Now we live together, never find the time. We used to walk as lovers on the sand. Now we're working full time on our lifetime plan. We never stop to see the moon at night. We're just too busy leading complicated.
Ronnie Spector from her new album, Unfinished Business, on the Columbia record label. The song we just heard is Love on a Rooftop. That really sounds good.
It's amazing, Terry, that's a new record, and it brings back such old memories.
Can we talk about some of those old memories?
Sure.
About how you started to sing? You formed the Ronettes with two of your cousins when you were all teenagers.
No, a sister and a cousin.
A sister and a cousin. Okay. Now, how did you learn to sing harmonies?
Actually, it was like a bunch of cousins. I had so many first cousins. It was like three other girls besides the two Ronettes. And it was a boy cousin singing lead. And it just sort of narrowed down to one. And I remember the three of us being on the rooftop, like learning routines, because we never had a choreographer or anything. We sort of did what the street dances and stuff, and we just made it three. And I remember being on the rooftop, you know, rehearsing and trying to get our routines together and stuff for the Brooklyn Fox. And what did you say? How did we get together? It was a family, and we had a sort of strict upbringing. So we couldn't go out, and we could look out in the street and watch other girls walk and everything, but we couldn't go out because our grandmother was very strict. So we stayed in the house, and that's how we all just started singing, because out of boredom and out of all the people in our neighborhood were, like, becoming stars, like Frankie Lyman and stuff. And when I met him, I was in love with him. I didn't even know him, and I was in love with him. I was in love with his voice.
What kind of neighborhood was it that you grew up in?
I grew up in Spanish Harlem, which was terrific because it was like every race, every color, every language. It was wonderful.
You know, speaking of every race, a friend of mine has always wondered what your ethnic background was, because he thought that you looked... Sometimes you looked white, sometimes you looked black, sometimes Hispanic, sometimes Italian, you know?
I know.
And he thought it made you especially mysterious and intriguing.
Well, what I really am, and this is the truth, my father's Irish, and my mother is black and Indian. And every time somebody says black and Indian, they say, oh, come on, they don't have Indian. My mother is really half Indian, and she has a high cheekbones. And so I do look like all of those races. I mean, my sister's married to Chinese. My cousin in the Ronettes is half Spanish. So our whole family was sort of mixed up, you know, racially.
Well, I guess that explains it.
Yeah. So it's like there's Chinese, Spanish, there's Irish, there's no Italian, no Jews. But you may as well say there's everybody. That's why I love growing up in Spanish Harlem, because there was a little Chinese guy I used to play with, Ben. Their family owned the laundry in the neighborhood. And we just didn't think about color and stuff till I got much, much older. I didn't even know about it.
You broke into the music business by being a dancer at the Peppermint Lounge, being a dancer on the Murray the K Show,
right,
singing backup vocals. Did you do things in those early days to help get yourself noticed? Did you either, like, dress in such a way as to call attention to yourself? Okay, what'd you do?
First of all, you have to have a gimmick in this business, we figured. And so we wore our hair extra high, you know, the beehives in the 60s, and we wore eyeliner, you know, like Chinese eyes almost, and we wore slits up the side of our dresses because we sang and danced. So we really looked different. And what was the question? I forget. I get so excited.
Oh, about things you did to call attention to yourself when you're trying to break in.
See, when we first, we decided to dress up, and we had a lot of aunts. My mother has like six sisters, and so that's seven of them dressing us, and they told us to put a cigarette in our mouth. And we stood outside the Peppermint Lounge, dressed just alike. And I was so glad, because at 14 I was smoking. They just didn't know it. And it was great because we stood online, and we had to look older, so we had to exaggerate everything because all of us were under age. So it was very hard, but we had our gimmick, and it was amazing because before we even had Be My Baby as a hit record, being at the Brooklyn Fox's Mary the K's Dancing Girls, we would come out for lunch, and it was actual girls dressed like us, and our hairstyles, it was knocking me out. I couldn't believe it.
You had some of the highest hair in the whole music business.
Well, that's what I said. You had to have a little attention. And we certainly brought attention with those high hairdos. I mean, we must have worn our hair at least 10 inches high. And we had all of our hair was real, you know, and most girls didn't have either that longer hair, or if they did, they didn't keep it that long. So we kept our hair long and all that stuff, too, to have that gimmick.
Now, you know, it always made me think that you were really tough, really streetwise.
No.
Where, you know?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, when we heard about people being junkies or dope addicts, I would ask my mother, well, let me see one, because the way my family would talk about them, it was like it was a disease, because I was very young and I didn't know. And I was like afraid of them before I even met them, because I didn't know what they looked like. So I wasn't a tough streetwise kid at all. But we just did all the dances. You know, and by living in Spanish Harlem, you learned all the dances anyway. I mean, you could just look out the window and people were on the corner singing and stuff. And it was just how I loved it. from the time I was 3 years old when my whole family applauded me. I remember the song was Jambalina Cove, Spine of Gilly Gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna meet Mom Shadow Mio. Pick a spot filled with Guy and Miguel. Son of a gun, we're having fun on the bayou. And I think that's when I got my ho, 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 ho. And then my family just started applauding me, and I was like 3 years old. And I said, that's what I want to be the rest of my life. I want to perform.
I'm trying to think of who had the hit of that. Was it Teresa Brewer, or am I imagining
I don't
that?
Know. I was like 3 years old. All I knew is like that little Jambalina Cove, Spine of Philly Gumbo. I don't even know if I'm singing it right now.
Right, I remember when that was a hit too. God, that's great. Listen, Ronnie, we're going to take a short break.
Sure.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk some more about some of your early records and then talk about the music that you're singing now.
Terrific.
My guest is Ronnie Spector, and she has a new album. It's called Unfinished Business. It's on Columbia Records. And we'll talk some more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Ronnie Spector is my guest. She used to be the lead singer of the Ronettes, and now she has a solo career. Ronnie, our director, reminded me that the hit of Jambalaya was actually Hank Williams.
And, really?
Yeah. And I did Teresa Brewer have a cover of that? Who knows? I always imagine her having covers of everything.
I have no idea.
But let's get to more of your recordings with the Ronettes. You first signed with a small label called Colpix Records.
And, that's right.
Those records never really became hits. How did you sign with Phil Spector, with whom you really recorded your best-known records?
Well, what we did, we were still with Colpix at the time when we met Phil. And he had my mother go down to Colpix Records and tell them that we didn't want any part of show business. We wanted to go back to school, and we just didn't want to sing anymore. And this was all Phil's plan, and my mother's and Phil's plan to get us on his label. So they released us, Colpix, and naturally we hadn't had any hits from them, so it wasn't like they were letting go these big stars. You know, we hadn't had any hit records, so it was perfect. And my mother went there one day, and she got them to release us because we were underage, and my mother said, they don't want to sing anymore. And about 6 months later, we had a number one record, so.
Fooled everybody.
Yeah. So that's how how we got to be with Phil on Philly's Records. But that's not how we met him, you see. My sister and myself and my cousin got together one night, and we said, how are we going to meet this Phil Spector? We hear he's the best producer in the world. And my sister said, well, why don't we pretend we're dialing him. We knew the number to his office, and we would pretend it's the wrong number and just say we were backup singers, and we'd love to come down and audition for him. And that's what we did. We called his office one day and we said, hi. We're calling for an audition. We're the Ronettes. And they said, well, you must have, her name was Joni, Phil's secretary. And she said, well, maybe, I don't know if Phil is auditioning, that I'll hold on. So we held on. And next thing we know, Phil was on the phone. And he said, I'd like to meet you girls the next night at Mirror Sound here in New York. And we couldn't believe it. And we did. And yeah, we sat down at the piano at Mirror Sound, and Phil said, sing me some songs that you guys just, know off the radio. And of course, by my loving Frankie Lyman, I started singing Why Do Fools Fall in Love, ABCs of Love, and he immediately fell in love with my voice. And he said, that's the voice I've been looking for.
Once he started working with you, did he make suggestions to you and the Ronettes about changes he wanted to hear in either the harmonies or the lead vocals?
No, because first of all, the backgrounds weren't just my sister and my cousin. It was like we had about 10 people. There was Cher, there was Sonny, there was Darlene Love. I mean, we had so many background singers on our records at the time. The lead singer was the most important in the wall of sound. In the background, he had like 10, 20, and he would make double those voices. So it was I don't know, it was very complicated in the studio, but it was, watching him work was a miracle to me, watching Phil Spector work in the studio.
You both became lovers. Did that add a certain drama to your performances when you worked together?
It may have, but I guess because I was, performing so much before I met him, I just had that, I love performing, and I don't think he, by falling in love with him, made me any better as far as my singing. I just think he knew what materials to pick out for us, you know, song-wise, like Be My Baby, Walking in the Rain. And he was just a great producer.
Walking in the Rain, we've heard some of Be My Baby's. Walking in the Rain, one of your favorites of the records that you recorded?
Be My Baby is my number one. I love it forever. And Walking in the Rain, I love it too. Yes, I really do.
I love that too. Why don't we hear a few seconds of it and then we'll talk some
more.
Okay, this is the Ronettes.
I want him, and I need him, and someday, some way, whoa, 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 I'll meet him. He'll be kind of shy and real good looking too, and I'll be certain he's my guy by the things he'll like to do. Like walking in the rain and wishing on the stars up above and being so in love. Oh, oh, oh.
Oh, Ronnie, that sounds great. That's Ronnie Spector singing along with a record from the 1960s of Walking in the Rain.
I couldn't help it,
Terry. Oh, that's terrific. You know, I'm thinking that the Motown girl groups had charm school and professional choreographers,
yes,
chaperones, all of that. Did you ever want evening gowns? Did you ever want the kind of polish that the groups like the Supremes had?
No, we didn't. We were strictly rock and roll. And I remember one of my sister's boyfriends at the time, he came over to our house while we were doing our rehearsals at my mom's house, you know. And he said, why don't you guys try to be more classy and act like the Supremes and, you know, stand there and with your aunt. I said, look, we're rock and roll. We got to move. We were singing songs like What I Say, La Bamba, you know, Turn on Your Love Lights. And we were really rock and roll. And rock and roll to me is not just standing there and having a choreographer. It's being real. It's rocking and rolling and not having being so choreographed. I can't have it now.
You gave up rock and roll for a while when you married Phil Spector.
That's not the right way to put it. I didn't give it up. As a matter of fact, I didn't know when I got married that I would never sing again. I thought, as a matter of fact, I would be recording a little bit more and maybe touring a little less. But I had no idea I would never record again or sing again or perform again. I sang again, but I didn't perform again.
So it was kind of against your will that you
Yeah, it was something I didn't expect.
Well, during that period, did you sing a lot in the house just to keep your voice in shape?
No, because there was no rock and roll allowed in my house then. It was only classical music played throughout the whole house, and how could I sing the classical music, you know, rock and roll? And I just didn't sing. I just, at night I would go to sleep, I remember, and just turn over and just think about being on stage and singing. Occasionally when I was in the bathroom, in the bathtub, I'd sing songs and stuff, but never too loud because he'd get angry.
Yeah, there was no rock and roll because your husband of the time, Phil Spector, didn't want it in the house. When you left that marriage and you left him and you tried to re-enter the music business again, had you lost your bearings for a while? Was it hard for you to find your place? You'd been out of the scene for a while and you hadn't even been listening to the music for a while.
Right. No, but I never lost my bearing. It's like, I guess it's like riding a bicycle. Once you, you know, learn, once you fall off, you get right back on. And that's how I was with my singing. Of course, it was much tougher. I remember I came back in 74, and I went to Buddha Records, and they auditioned me. They loved me. And a few weeks later, Phil sent them a letter saying that I was still his wife because it took me 2 years to get a divorce. And immediately they let me go. So I had a lot against me because of Phil. You know, people just said, well, we don't want to be bothered with him because he was known for suing people and, you know, making scenes and keeping people in court. And that's basically why I didn't get started as fast as I wanted to, you know, because everywhere I went, he sort of like, you know, stuck his 2 cents in at the time.
You recently remarried, and I believe your husband is also your manager.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you were ever afraid to get involved with a professional relationship that was also an intimate relationship because of how you had been hurt the first time by combining the two like
I tell you, I wouldn't have never married. First of all, I've been married 2 years, and I have two kids now, a 3 and 4. With Phil, I had kids, too. I had 3 kids, but they were all adopted. But with this particular marriage, I wouldn't have gotten married to this gentleman if I hadn't known. I made sure, because of my first marriage, I made sure. Because he was managing other people in Broadway shows and stuff. So he knew that I loved it, and I knew he loved what he was doing. It wasn't, I went out with him for a few years before we got married, and I knew that he loved me being on stage. He loved it because I loved it. And I don't think I would have ever gotten married to a man that didn't like my career or didn't have anything to do with it or just didn't want me on stage. So, really, I know what you're saying. I would have never married again.
To my knowledge, you're the only one of the Ronettes that is still singing. What are your sister and cousin doing now?
They're both married to the same guys for like 19, 20 years, and they have kids. See, when we were younger as the Ronettes, I always loved it. They liked it. I mean, when you're 15 and 16, you like things or you love things. And I loved it, and they liked it. We were having fun, you know, making all this money, young and having fun, and they liked it a lot until they met the men they were going to marry. And I loved it. See, there's a difference. They liked it, and I loved it.
Well, I'm glad you're back recording and performing again. It's a pleasure to hear your voice
again.
Thank
you, Terry. I'm so glad to be back.
And I thank you very much for spending some time with us on Fresh Air.
Oh, anytime.
My guest has been Ronnie Spector. In the 1960s, she was the lead singer in the girl group The Ronettes. She now has a new album out. It's called Unfinished Business. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.